public good. Myths continue to be constructed around viruses, vaccines, forensics, and pharmaceutical drugs. People are dying and ending up in jail because of them. Listen to me as I deconstruct the myths that those who call themselves scientists weave, or when I wander into social and political topics.
It's just not enough.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about marijuana as a possible exit drug to help combat the enormous opiate crisis we have today. There's new research from the Cleveland Clinic on that. And also for those of you who've been doing your brisk walking every day, well, good for you, especially among women. Brigham and Young's hospital's got some new information on that. And going back to the idea of the cannabinoids, that's the active ingredient in marijuana, can they be used to treat cancer? Now, we know the answer, but the Oncology Institute, University of Novi Sad in Serbia, did their own independent research. They reviewed all of the scientific studies, and I'll tell you what they said. Also, your immune cells can mistake heart attacks for viral infections. New information on that. We have a lot to share on that and a lot more. Then we're going to take a look at the idea that Americans are not really conscious of all the things they purchase. Do we need them? Will we gain happiness by buying something? Do we have any awareness of what happens when it's thrown away? It's no longer in our sight, our house, our apartment, our home, our car, our basement. Where does it go? Do we have any responsibility for the planet, for each other, for our communities, about what ends up in the ocean or landfills? We're going to have part two of a documentary on consumerism. Now, consumerism is a direct offshoot of capitalism, and therefore it's bringing into question capitalism. How many times have you heard someone say, I'm working as hard as I can, and then you ask, why? What is the purpose? What is the object of the exercise? Well, I've got bills. What are the bills for? Are you living in a place that you cannot afford? Are you paying for things that you shouldn't be paying for? What's wrong with how we plan our lives? We're still living by this mantra that we all should have the American dream and own a house. It's not true. Or we should buy a new car. Not true. Or everyone should go to college. Not everyone should go to college. And then one day we wake up and we found the bad choices we've made literally control the next 10, 15, 20, or 30 years of our life. So part two of that. And then I'm also going to take a look at some of the things happening around the world from a progressive perspective. One of our listeners from the Maryland area, a nurse, sent me an email yesterday and said in the email that she no longer trusts any of the mainstream media. She used to listen and watch in on MSNBC, but she now realizes, after listening to this program, how biased and inaccurate they are in their reporting. So she says she goes to the Facebook page each day for anywhere from 50 to 100 postings from around the world. And when she listens to the show, she gets a perspective she's not getting elsewhere. Well, thank you for that. And I hope that other people realize that our guests, our commentaries, our investigative reports, the postings, are all meant to give you a more honest, ethical, and moral understanding of the world. So I'm going to hit a lot of things today. Let's begin. Now, as doctors, one of the primary responsibilities is to alleviate pain. Yes. And as an anesthesiologist and an internist who was reporting from the Cleveland Clinic, ran one of the largest pain therapy centers in the world, And as a heart surgeon, another cardiologist talked about cardiac-related pain and helping patients manage post-pain surgery. And for years, the medical profession relied upon opiates to do the job. But now, because of the spike in addiction and overdose drugs, people dying from these opiates, there must be a way for alternatives to breach the pharmaceutical barrier. And each day in America, opiate overdoses send more than 1,000 people every 24 hours to the emergency room. And prescription opiate pain relievers accounted for 20,101 deaths from overdoses. And right now, we're looking at more than, well, just thus far this year, over 100 deaths every 24 hours. Remember, 1,000 people go to the emergency room, and 10% of them die. And that's more than auto accidents. So how did we get here? Well, the medical profession recognized that it needed to do more to help people deal with pain. But once again, it went way too far. That coincided with the 1996 debut of the opiate pain reliever OxyContin. It's also known as oxycodone, C-O-D-O-N-E. And it was marketed by Purdue Pharmaceuticals. And sales rep touted the drug as having an addiction rate of less than 1%. Boy, were they wrong. The claim landed Purdue in hot water because in 2007, the company and three executives pleaded guilty in federal court to criminal charges that they misled regulators and doctors and patients about the drug's risk of addiction and its potential to be abused. And the executives were sentenced to probation and 400 hours of community service in a drug treatment facility. And the company was fined $634 million. So what? That's meaningless. That's just the cost of doing business, because the damage was done. And by 2004, OxyContin had become the leading drug to abuse in the United States. And today, overprescription of such opiate pain relievers remains a problem. And half of people taking them get those meds from a friend or family member who has the extras lying around. So what can be done? Well, this message goes out to all the doctors. Mind you, this is coming directly from the Cleveland Clinic, one of the most respected centers in the United States. The doctors are saying, solve the epidemic of abuse and overdose. It's not that difficult. And help people with their pain. That, quote, this is from the Cleveland Clinic, we believe medical cannabis could be that alternative in certain situations, and we're calling on the federal government to fund the research because we need to find out which situation specifically fits. A Dr. Ozhas, O-Z-H-A-S, stated, and this is, he stated before the National Institutes of Health, quote, $101 million to cannabis research. This number represents a mere 0.3% of the National Institutes of Health's total spending on research and is only 0.1% of the opiate epidemic cost. So what these doctors are saying is they need more facts, because there's outdated beliefs and policies have prevented our country from funding medical cannabis research. And the Drug Enforcement Administration, which is part of the Department of Justice, classifies marijuana as a Schedule I drug, right behind heroin and LSD. And Schedule I drugs are defined as drugs with no currently accepted medical use and a high potential for abuse. That is such nonsense. Even our National Academy of Sciences, the final arbiter in anything in science, goes before them. And if you look at their engineering and medicine review, of all their scientific articles that are in our database, the national database, the Library of Medicine database that all scientific researchers can use, it's the official government one, there's 22,000 studies on the medical uses of cannabis. So here's the absurdity. One branch of government, the Department of Justice, is saying, we'll put you in jail if we find you have any, or using it, or distributing it, or growing it, because it's an illegal drug, no better than heroin. And then we have the National Academy of Science and the and the Library of Medicine with 22,000 studies from peer-reviewed literature showing it has incredible medical benefit. So when I'm critical of the bureaucracy and the technocracies and those who had the political power to control our policies, and you think, gee whiz, could Gary be right that virtually every single government agency should be completely reviewed and audited for what we need to do, what we need to change, so that we could be able to function where the government functions to assist Americans in their daily lives, not to control them? Because right now, we have a massive metastasizing cancer on the full body of the American public. And it's the government bureaucracies. And behind them are the technocrats. These are the so-called gifted men and women from the Ivy League schools. Not all Ivy League members by any means, but those who intend to make their fortunes by aligning politically and ideologically so they can benefit financially. So they're the ones who do two things simultaneously. The Bill Clintons, the Obamas, George Bushes will do the drugs, write about it, and then turn around when they're present and put people imprisoned for years for doing what they did. I mean, just stop for a moment and think about that. Bill Clinton, it was said by one of the people who did drugs with him that, quote, he had the nose of a vacuum cleaner. That's how much cocaine he could bring in. And it was no secret. I even found out the physician that twice, attended to his overdosing and Hillary Clinton's threatening the doctor. And nobody in the Democratic Party wants to hear that story, but it's a real story. Fine. Why don't we legalize all drugs and then provide in every community in America free health clinics to support a person's getting off the drugs psychologically and physically? Suddenly, where are the profits going to come to the drug cartels if there's no profit in selling drugs and distributing drugs? Think of all the gangs that have become rich and notorious and deadly because of drugs. The war on drugs is no more legitimate than the war on for prohibition. And you saw that prohibition gave us La Costa Nostra. Lucky Luciano was the head of it. Meyer Lansky was the brains behind it. Vito Genovese. These were the Frank Costello. These were the people in the first organized crime. That would not have happened had it not been for prohibition. And then it went on from there. So we could do a lot of good if we had the ability to bypass all of our conditioning and say, let's deal with this the right way. So one of the ways we can deal with it is with the pain-relieving benefits of medical marijuana. So join in calling on the National Institutes of Health to quadruple its spending on this important research. Here's the irony. There's already enough research. And you can go to change.org and search for Fund More Research for Medical Marijuana. And that's from a person that's never done any drug in his life, me. No alcohol, no drugs. But that doesn't mean that I am any less empathetic for people who use them and or whose lives could be benefited from the medical use. Now, from Brigham and Women's Hospital, they're talking about a lack of exercise or physical activity. And here's what they say, quote, it is estimated to cause as many deaths each year as smoking. So think about that. Now, it's not too late to influence the greatest generation, my parents' generation, those born before or during the Great Depression. I never will forget how wonderful it was when my mom and I, and she was an athlete, we would go running. And up at the McConnell Farm, their big pasture, we'd run down the road. And it was just one of those magical moments, especially when you can run with your mom and dad, and they're fast. And then one day, I came back from New York. I hadn't been here long. And I noticed three things. First, that my mom had dyed her hair. One of the god-awful grayish, and had it all in one of those 1960, 70s strange looks. It looked like a little beehive was on her hair and about 300 cans of hairspray sprayed on it. And I also know that her weight had changed. She gained some weight around her belly. And she was smoking. Now, everyone in my family except myself smoked. Moderate smoking in my family was 3 packs a day, and heavy smoking was 4 and even 5. My father, I never saw him without a cigarette. And all my aunts and uncles smoked, and they considered that normal. They did not consider that disadvantageous because they're conditioning. And I said, Mom, I said, what's with the hair? Because she used to have long, beautiful hair, black hair, auburn, that would go clear down to her shoulders. And here, there's just strange. Well, she said this. Well, Gary Michael, when you hit a certain age, you don't want to stand out. And so, you know, I'm like the other women. I said, Mom, that's stupid. I mean, those other women, they're not healthy. And the only reason you haven't gotten sick is because you've done a lot of exercise. You're smoking, you're drinking, you're not getting a good night's sleep, you're not eating a good diet. So that was the one thing you were doing to your advantage. Well, how does it look when a woman's over 40 running around, you know, and exercising? It doesn't look right. And I would think, what do you care? But then again, I was living in New York City where I could run around Central Park in the morning. I'd be lucky to meet 3 people. In fact, this is a true story. The Liottis were an Italian family, wonderful Italian family. There were 5 sisters, and they all had unique personalities. And it was always the Catholics who were the hippest people where I grew up. They were the most fun to be around. They always seemed to be ahead of everyone else rather than the peripheral group. And they actually lived on a bridge. Now, this would never happen today. But you can walk up the Belpre Bridge and walk across the road to get in to their house. There was a back way you came up, but that's how most people came in and out. And no one thought that was unusual. And they had this, there was always great music going on. They were always dancing. And so one day I ran, I had on my gym shorts and tank top. I ran down there. And as I'm running across the bridge, a cop car stops me, says, pull over. So I stopped. What are you running from? I'm just running. From what? I'm just out here running. I'm an athlete. I'm running. And then the guy says, what's your name? I said, Gary Knoll. Oh, okay. And that's all right. And I'm thinking, my God, I just got stopped for running. I got an outfit on. I got sneakers. So conventional, so uptight, so conservative was the community I grew up in that when they saw someone running, they thought they were running from a crime or something. And my godfather was chief of police. And I had an uncle who was also in the police. My father was a police officer too. So I didn't get in any trouble. There wouldn't be any trouble I could get in. It was just bizarre. So walking briskly is what we need to do, and we're not doing it as a society. Too many people are not exercising. Too many people lack that desire and discipline to get up and get out and move. Here's a suggestion. This is an easy one. Get yourself 2 kind of hard rubber balls, maybe the size of a baseball or an orange. And throughout the day, you go barefoot at your desk and roll your feet back and forth, you know, every 10, 15 minutes. That'll help. Then get 2 light rubber weights, dumbbells. Depending upon your strength, you can have 3 pounds, 5 pounds, 10 pounds. I have 2 20-pounds beside my desk right now. And throughout the day, I'll just stop and I'll just I'll do 20, 30, 40 curls. First, it really helps you. It circulates the blood, stimulates the lymphatic drainage. It's terrific for your overall musculature. It burns internal cell fat. It lays down more tissue. It gives you that cut look. And do that at your desk. Maybe every hour. Just do some curls, arm raises, raise them in front of you, raise them at the side, bring them in front of your chest and back. Maybe one set of 10, one set of 20. You shouldn't be able to do anything more than 20 times, because if you do, it's too light a weight. You want to be able to put some stress on the muscles. So that will help you when you're sitting at home. So at least start exercising, because it makes a big difference. Currently, the guidelines recommend at least 150 minutes a week of moderate intense physical activity, and or 75 minutes of vigorous intensity aerobic physical activity or combination. I suggest double that. But when you do that, according to the peer-reviewed journal Circulation, they found that physical activity of women measured over 7 days using a wearable device called a triaxial accelerometer found that more physical activity and higher intensity of physical activity could decrease the risk of death in older women from any cause. So you literally hold off death. How about that? By as much as 60 to 70% at the end of a 4-year study among those active women. So I cannot emphasize enough the power of this. And one final thing on cannabinoids. When cannabinoids activate signaling pathways in cancer cells, they can stimulate a cell death mechanism and unleash that's in other words, the cell's committing suicide, the cancer cell is. And that unleashes a powerful anti-tumor effect. And yet cannabinoids, which have also shown strong activity against human tumor tissue grown in animal models, have undergone minimal testing in patients. And their potential use as anti-tumor drugs, and non-toxic drugs, natural drugs, to boost the effectiveness of your therapy. This was published in the Journal of Alternative and Complementary Medicine, a major peer-reviewed journal. So, and the article is entitled, A Review of Therapeutic Anti-Tumor Potential of Cannabinoids. Just one more in thousands. So we don't need any more studies. We need to get doctors to start using it. We need state legislators to legalize it. And I will start posting thousands of articles in the peer-reviewed literature on the benefits of the cannabinoids for brain cancer, lung cancer, seizures, autism spectrum disorders, Asperger syndrome, multiple sclerosis, and these are the conditions, and dementia leading to Alzheimer's. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall, broadcasting not from New York City. I'm at my home, a ranch where I live, with a whole lot of rescued animals, finding homes for those on a regular basis, which it's sad and it's wonderful. It's sad that, you know, you've taken in a creature that frequently was abused or neglected and malnourished and just skin and bones or in pain and fearful. And a year later, they're happy, healthy, trusting, and then you find them a great home in a large animal sanctuary. Some of those out there are 1,000 acres. They can be around other species and allowed to roam wild. Put them back in natural habitats wherever possible. Already I put the 2 baby rabbits and a squirrel that were showed up. And I mean, they were, how they got there, I don't know. But they were right outside the door of the barn. And had they not been picked up, they'd be dead 6 hours later because they have to be fed so much. And so whether the mothers brought them there or whether this the storm brought them there, but they were hand-fed every hour for 20 hours a day. And they've been let go. And it's funny because every day they show back up again. They come in and they get hugged and they get petted and then they get food and then they go scampering back out and climb the trees and run around with all the other little creatures. So that's where I'm at right now, cleaning up from the storm. It'll take another month, but it's getting done. I'll take photographs and then I'll do a workshop of what can be done to clean up rather than to cut down everything after a storm. Everyone else just cuts everything to pieces. No need to do that. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay with us. Now, for those of you who were listening yesterday, you heard part one of a program on consumerism. We're going to now go to part two, and I'll be asking you for your feedback on what you believe are the best solutions to overconsuming, and what have you done in your own life that will help that. And before we go there, however, I was just notified that we have Elizabeth. Elizabeth Cormick is on the line, and we haven't, unfortunately, because of the hurricane and me being away for a month with a retreat and helping people. And by the way, I got a really nice letter this morning from one of the people who was at the retreat talking about how it virtually transformed their life. So I'm putting together those letters and their feedback, and I'll post them so you can read it also. But she takes your questions from all over the world. And if you want to ask a question, simply go to prnstudio@gmail.com. That's P for Progressive, R, Radio, N, Network, Progressive, prnstudio@gmail.com. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Gary. How are you? Yes, it's nice to be back on the radio again. I have a question here from Nia. She says she's confused about the tax cut. She doesn't understand how it will help the average person. And what are your views on that, please?
Okay. First off, the tax cut is not going to benefit the way people assume. You have to pull back and look at the larger picture. For example, most large corporations do not pay much taxes. If you look at how much they actually pay, it's very small or none at all. In fact, in some cases, you can make billions of dollars in profits and actually pay no taxes and get subsidies from the United States taxpayer. So the entire tax code should be abolished. It's thousands, tens of thousands of pages long, and corporations hire high-priced lawyers to find ways that they can legally not pay their fair share. And many times, people make their profits, but they make them offshore. They make them in other countries. And then they keep them in offshore accounts. No one knows the exact amount, but to the best guesstimates, individuals have over $3 trillion in offshore accounts, but corporations are holding over $30 trillion. And there's no reason for them to bring that money back in the United States when they would have to pay a large amount of that, well, let's say 35% of that in taxes. So that's that's a huge amount that they could save by just parking it. But when I looked at I believe it was last week, I looked at how much are people actually paying. I looked at the top 20 corporations in the United States, and I could not find that they were paying any substantial amount of taxes, anywhere between 2% to 6% in taxes. That's it. So I believe that we are not aware of how much, for example, how much do we owe? $200 trillion total. That's all of our expenses, corporate cost, our debt, consumer debt, credit card debt, student debt, car debt, mortgage debt, state debt, community debt, unfunded liabilities, partially funded liabilities, and you're $200 trillion. If you took any other country in the world, if you took France or England or Germany or Russia or India, their debt compared to the gross domestic product is 1/10 of ours, which means that we are 900% more in debt than they are. And yet we are never criticized for our enormous debt and the servicing costs on that debt. So wouldn't it make more sense if we did the following? Instead of lowering the taxes, because where are we supposed to get the money to pay for all these different services that the community needs for infrastructure repair, our roads, from our highways to our local streets in Brooklyn, when there are potholes, our tunnels, bridges, and 90% of all of our infrastructure is old and breaking down. And all we can do is just do patchwork on it. We're not replacing them with state-of-the-art. We don't even have, can you imagine this? We don't even have a national bullet train. Ones like Germany or France or Japan or China has. So they have technology that we do not, yet we are no less capable of doing a bullet train going from New York to San Francisco, from San Francisco to Los Angeles, from Chicago to Houston. We could put bullet trains across the United States, and imagine what that would do for the environment. Think of how many people would no longer need to fly, but instead could take a bullet train and get there in a reasonable period of time. So we should be putting money into infrastructure or not. Our dams, our levees are antiquated. We have great need to do a reforestation. We should be planting 100 million trees per state. We got 50 states. So it's 50 times 100 million. Suddenly we're doing a lot to create carbon sinks, meaning that we would have in every state hiring local people at a living wage for a period of time to put in hedges, to put in trees, and then those trees hold in the carbon and give us cleaner oxygen, clean up the air, and take in toxins and hold that CO2 in the ground. That's important. So that we can do. And we can lessen, if we put in high-speed rails, we could do a lot more in saving on emissions than we're doing. But at the bottom of of all this, we should have a flat tax. And it would work this way. Let's say that right now it's, for argument's sake, that people are going to pay about 35% in taxes. It's actually not true, because New York or frequently double tax on many items. When you add up all the taxes for living in New York for 1 year, it comes to around 60%. So what if we just paid one tax? That's it. No more income tax. And we shouldn't be taxed on our income. We shouldn't be taxed on our work. Tax on what people buy. And you have an escalating tax. Those who buy necessities of life, that's the lowest tax. It's a sales tax. And then that sales tax helps to support the local community, your schools, your roads, your infrastructure, but also state taxes. And then with companies, you have one flat tax. Let's say it's 20%. Now, 20% would save a lot of people money, but then you do away with the IRS, you do away with keeping receipts, you do away with accountants. None of that is needed, because no matter what you do, every penny that you make, you cannot make deductions. There's no more deductions. It's one flat tax, and everybody must pay it. It's mandatory. Because right now, the richest 100 companies in the United States, like Google and Apple, they're paying next to nothing in taxes. So they get the benefit of all that they're keeping, and now Apple is close to $900 billion in total value. They're approaching $1 trillion. They'll be the first company, along with Google, to hit $1 trillion total value. And yet, what do we get from it? So this way, you would bring another $1 trillion into the Treasury Department. You then abolish the Federal Reserve, and you do not allow banks to give mortgages or loans out in the future unless they have a complete revision, where they can't just, right now, they just push a computer button and that's it. They don't have to have any of the money that they're giving away. They'll just credit or debit it to your account. It's all on a computer. It's all a fiat currency. There is nothing. There's no gold. There's no silver. There's nothing backing up our dollar. We just print dollars until it makes your head explode. It's lacking in every basic economic principle. where China right now and Russia, they're backing the yuan and the ruble with gold. So you know that the currency is going to be stronger in the long term because they have something of solid value to back it up with. But also, right now, China is working with 67 other countries to create a new Silk Road where they're building bridges and high-speed transportation and factories and creating jobs and improving the quality of life around the whole area of Africa and the Middle East and Asia. We, on the other hand, spend nothing, not a penny, to help enhance the quality of life in a country. We go in to militarize it. We'll put in these stealth and, for all intents and purposes, over 960 secret military bases. And then we bring in these special ops groups. And then we become permanently ensconced in another country. Wonder which one's going to have the better outcome. Wonder which one the people are going to appreciate more. Coming to occupy, conquer, and dictate, or coming to cooperate and work and create prosperity. And you, one has a currency behind it that has gold, and there has nothing behind it. The dollar's worthless. Our entire economic system is worthless because it's not based upon true profit. When people are spending money, more often than not today, they're spending money on debt, meaning they are using a credit card to pay their rent, to buy food, but they don't have that money. Now they have to use another credit card to pay that credit card. It's called kiting. You might have 15 credit cards, and you just keep juggling one to pay the other, one to pay the other, hoping that it never gets to where you finally have to pay it. But you're always going to be paying only partial payments, so your interest goes from 18% to 38% or higher. And now you're in debt peonage. Your college education that cost you $28,000 at the end of 15 years will cost you $78,000. So we have to take a different approach economically. For those who know how to manipulate the system, it works for them. For everyone else, it doesn't. And the only people who benefit from this tax cut are the rich and powerful. And what does it say when we are actually having a debate about tax cuts for people who could not spend all the money that they have in a lifetime? And when you're a billionaire, just imagine what you can buy. And yet, we want to give them the benefits because they're the ones who pay for the lobbyists that show up at the legislator's office. And it doesn't matter whether you're Republican. The Republicans are known for having no heart and no brain. They're zombies, all of them. Rand Paul, they're all completely heartless, stupid, vile human beings. And then the Democrats are the same thing, except they have a brain. It's just put on self-serving megalomania, tell the people anything, completely exploit their already destitute position. And then when they get angry and vote for a Trump, and you're angry because they didn't vote for your maniacal, megalomaniac, completely corrupt person, then control the media and have a campaign against the people that voted for not your person. So we got to stop this whole argument about which is better, a higher tax cut or a lower tax cut. There should be no tax cut. There should be one flat tax that everybody pays. Nobody can get out of it. Eliminate the IRS, eliminate the Federal Reserve, eliminate interest. Let the Treasury print money, and the only person that should print money without interest. Forgive all debt to banks. We forgave their debt. Now let's get rid of the $800 billion a year we're giving them. And by the way, they never gave that money out of their pockets to the federal government to begin with. This is a shell game. So we should put most banks out of business. We should have public banks where the public can participate and have control over, and we should eliminate the Glass-Steagall exemptions. We should reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act. And just understand, the worst human beings on this planet are Wall Street, the lawyers, and the politicians, the heads of the military-industrial complex, the generals, and the media. And they're all part of the same happy family. Be happy if you haven't been adopted to them. Does that answer your question?
That's very good. Yes. Thank you very much. Is there time for another one, or shall I?
One more.
Okay. This is from Cynthia in Los Angeles. She says that she misses you on KPFK. She wants to know, are you ever coming back? And she's asking, why did you leave? Like, 1 minute you were there, and then you were not on, and what happened?
After 33 years of being on there 6 hours every week and forgoing my salary and raising them the largest amount of money in their history and their largest audience, at 3 o'clock in the morning, my audience over the internet, just over the internet, was 4,000 people. That's more than they had listening in prime time in the morning. I found that I could not support the way that the stations were run, their management, many of the on-air people, and the group supporting them at the national level, the executive directors. And when I interviewed a woman who had been, she claims, sexually molested, raped repeatedly, and threatened with a gun by one of the people in Pacifica, and I sent that information and this woman to the executive director, nobody would speak with her. Nobody wanted the information. And yet they were raising money, as I found out. I didn't know it until I did my investigation. And the second largest expense at Pacifica each year, for years and years, was to settle sexual harassment cases. And some of those people had been found guilty, including one by the National Labor Relations Commission and for sexually harassing an award-winning reporter at KPFA. That person's still on the air today. How in the world can you possibly allow someone who has been proven to have been sexually harassing people and still out on the air and then go out and do a program on sexual assault? And so I'd had enough. It was a culture of corruption that would not change, of little fiefdoms, of internecine conflict, and it no longer represented anything that were the ideals of Lewis Hill, the original founder. And I just said, they're not going to change. They can't change. They're too far gone to change. So I just, without saying anything, I just left after 33, 34 years. No, I will not be going back. I was asked recently. I won't go back. I don't want to go back. Why in the hell would I go back if I hold them in such disdain just because I can raise a lot of money? Well, screw them. I won't raise them another nickel. Does that answer that question?
Yes, very well. Yeah.
Good. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you
all the time we've got today. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Oh, yeah.
Woo. The big stuff. Who do you think you are, Mr. Big Stuff? You're never gonna get my love.
Okay. Never know what questions are flying at me. I'd like to welcome all of you. I was asked by my staff in New York, will we give one of those phenomenal specials? I'm only going to do this one more time. This is it. Today, I'm going to give you a phenomenal special. Here's the deal. If you order any of these bundle choices, and the sales staff will, Diane and Giovanni and Mila and Neil and Sandy will go over these with you, like calcium and magnesium with Power Berry Blast, it would be regularly $238 and it's yours for $138. Or glucosamine sulfate and chondroitin sulfate with MSM and Power Berry Blast, it's yours for regularly $260, yours for $159. Now, when you have either of those twos, here's what I'm going to throw in for free. A $113 bottle of cardio stuff. That's right. You get cardio stuff free. Now, when you look at what's in the calcium magnesium, it's calcium from citrate, a magnesium from citrate and oxide, and it's in vegetable vegan capsules. You're also getting ascorbyl palmitate in there, and it's phenomenal. It's the best calcium. It's kosher, it's vegan, it's non-GMO, and it's gluten-free. It's my version of what an ideal calcium magnesium should be. And the glucosamine and chondroitin with MSM, again, it's vegan capsules. You're getting ascorbyl palmitate, magnesium aspartate, glucosamine sulfate, chondroitin sulfate, MSM, boswellia, N-acetylglucosamine, turmeric from curcumin root, and you're also getting and a standardized 95% curcuminoids, sea cucumber, ginger root, red pepper fruit, oregano herbs, white willow bark, garlic, clove, rosemary, broccoli stem, citrus bioflavonoids. So people, you know who you know. If you've got the condition, anyone who's got the conditions, that you know how this benefits you. So this is the best glucosamine and chondroitin and MSM I could possibly create. And then, of course, the Power Berry Blast. This gives you the blueberries, raspberries, beets, black currants, cranberry, goji, acai, bilberry, grapeseed extract, aronia berry, cherries, elderberry, strawberries, raspberries, blackberries, camus, noni, pineapple, guava, banana, quercetin, stevia. It's kosher, it's vegan, it's non-GMO and gluten-free. So there are combinations. You get any two combinations or in any one combination you want, and you get free the cardio stuff. And the cardio stuff, let's see, cardio. Wonder what that is good for. Well, you know what it's good for. And it's got everything I would ever suggest for your cardiovascular system in there. It's delicious. It's phenomenal. It's powerful. And it's my gift. You get that as a gift when you order any of these bundle choices. And so it's not confusing. They'll tell you which products you can order and what's in them, and they'll describe them, and you can decide which ones you want. And you're getting a phenomenal sale. Not only are you getting a sale on the product themselves, you're also getting a $113 product given to you absolutely free when you order them. So here's the number you call to get your special. And the number is, let me just see the number here, 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065. So just imagine, if you want the best berry collection imaginable, it's in Berry Blast. Think of what your body benefits from when you can have something that directly impacts it when it deals with all the different types of pain we have. There's your chondroitin. So you're looking at the different products and then the best calcium magnesium blend I know of. So these are the products. Absolutely the best. So give a call. You're getting a phenomenal discount. 877-627-5065. Now we're going to finish off our program today by going to part two of consumerism.
Most famously, in the 1960s, the hippie movement rebelled against rampant capitalism. It transformed this disgust with materialism not just into a philosophy, but into a new way of living, too. Millions attempted to drop out. It was a movement that had enormous appeal. This was pretty much the point when I first got involved, as the environment and social justice grabbed my attention and suppressed whatever shopping gene I may once have had. It all started in a comprehensive in West London, where I spent 10 years of my life teaching English and drama.
I wasn't exactly an out-and-out hippie, but even then I can remember the kids constantly taking the piss out of me for choosing to own a bicycle rather than a car, for never buying new clothes until I absolutely had to because the old ones were falling to pieces. To them, I just wasn't doing my duty as a consumer. So even in the 70s, the juggernaut of consumerism was grinding into top gear, and trashing the environment was almost universally accepted as a reasonable price to pay for all that increased consumption.
However, by the end of the 1970s, the environmentalist message was beginning to be taken seriously. Organizations like Greenpeace and Friends of the Earth, of which I was then the director, captured the headlines. But then, America and the West took a fateful step. A new breed of politicians dismissed environmental warnings and ushered in an age of even more rampant materialism. Hippies were now replaced by yuppies, and a new philosophy ruled. Greed is good. Throughout the 80s, we were all encouraged to measure our success by how much we earned and how much we bought. And today's successors to Thatcher and Reagan have done little to set aside the toxic legacy of such triumphalist individualism. Such is the momentum of consumerism that nothing has been able to slow its relentless march. After 9/11, with America shaken to its core, President Bush told the nation to demonstrate they were unbowed by this assault on the American way of life by going shopping.
We cannot let the terrorists achieve the objective of frightening our nation to the point where we don't conduct business, where people don't shop.
You can see what the president meant. Behaving normally was the best response. And normality in today's economy means being out there shopping.
Nothing, not even international terrorism, would be allowed to stand between the people and their pursuit of the great American dream.
The irony is that the biggest threat to the United States and to the rest of the world isn't terrorism. It's consumerism itself. We've unleashed so powerful a force that our politicians simply don't know how to get this particular genie back into its bottle. But there are practical solutions, if we have the courage to act on them now. It is now almost 250 years since the philosopher Adam Smith told us that the pursuit of wealth was not just good for the individual, but good for society too. We are all beneficiaries of that extraordinary transformation. Today we are all spoiled for choice, as long as you can afford it. And globalization means that the hamburger you buy in China will taste the same as the one you buy in the United States. Consumerism has become the global language that everyone understands.
At the beginning of the 21st century, there are now more than 2 billion people able to enjoy the fruits of mass consumption. Whichever way you cut it, that's an extraordinary achievement. You just can't deny that represents progress with a capital P.
But at long last, we're beginning to realize just how high a price we're having to pay for this. Visit any old landfill site and you'll begin to see what I mean. Here in Britain, we get rid of our own body weight in rubbish every 7 weeks. And the amount of rubbish we throw away just keeps growing. There are 12,000 landfill sites in the UK alone dedicated to dealing with the 100 million tons of waste we produce each year.
Buy it one day, chuck it the next. In our throwaway world, who cares?
We throw out 1.5 million computers every year, 99% of them in perfect working order. On average, we buy a new mobile phone every 18 months. Leaving 90 million working handsets hoarded in cupboards up and down the country. And 3 million fridges are discarded every year. Every year we buy more products, more things we think we need, using more energy, creating more waste. It's this seemingly inexorable process which is now threatening life on Earth.
So, am I being overdramatic? Well, just look at the evidence. What were once the dodgy projections of so-called extremists like myself on waste, energy, water, and so on? are now the hard-edged scientific data of government research departments.
And the data's getting more frightening by the day. Across the world, more and more countries are following in our polluted tracks.
The last segment we'll be doing will talk about solutions. And then I'll ask you to call in and share your ideas. I'm sure many of you have made your own life choices much simpler. You've downsized. You've uncluttered. You're happier, healthier. And we'd like to hear from you on an upcoming program. But we're out of time now. I want to thank you all for listening. Have a nice day. Cool.